He was a provincial cup champion on the footy field, dominated the Ironman claimers, and now is a Group 1 tipster. His name is David Gately, or Gator to his mates. So let's welcome in Gator for Racing Rewind on RSN Central.
It is time for Racing Rewind with David Gately. The best question this morning receives a $75 voucher to Ribera's. It swallows 192 Station Street, Port Melbourne. Ribera's offers only the freshest seafood available, purchased at the fish markets every day, prepared on the premises. David Gately, good morning to you.
Hey, man.
How are you, David?
I didn't expect that question. Yeah, look, I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
Usually you ask how are you when you start a conversation. What do you start with?
Basically hello and then try and end it as soon as possible, depending on the human I'm talking to.
Well, you need to be better than that because you've got a lot of friends here that want to say g'day and see how you're travelling. It's hot today. Yeah. Have you been trading, Gator?
Very light swim race yesterday, so very easy half-hour swim this morning in the recovery mode, mate.
Oh, okay. Did you have a triathlon recently?
Yeah, I did yesterday. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Well, how did you go?
I ran first. So
that's good.
Basically, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, that is very hard to beat. Was it the over, 40s? Don't lie to the audience, say that you won the triathlon.
It's all age group.
Oh, did you win?
Yeah, won the age group. So 45 to 49. So look, it's pretty old, but it's all relative, isn't it? It's all relative.
It is. It is. And if you run quick, you're quick, aren't you? That's all.
Write that down.
That's what we all should remember with when you talk racing with Gator. Now, our six points. We raced at Pakenham there on Saturday for Cup Day. We'll start off with the Cup because there was a roughie at 100-1 basically for Manny Kamani and Fred Kersley that took out the Cup, Ida James, and she was dominant from the front end.
Good effort because she's had to ride a strong speed and she held off. You know, that horse coming off a terrific win, Secret Bias, did run well in a South Australian Derby. She's a fascinating little race mare. This one won six of her first 10, if you don't mind. At the tail end of those six wins, she won a Group 3 Lord Dream Stakes. She beat Master of Arts in Benzini. She led all the way that day, and we all thought, oh, how good this thing? It might be a tough horse. Lost her way for whatever reason. Obviously, you know, probably a number of little reasons, but there were really positive signs in the Sandown Cup when she went back and closed off well. Now, could we trust her again into the Pakenham Cup, given it had been a while since we'd seen that sort of, that you know, early form in Hannigan in the Sandown Cup run? The market said no, and you know, I certainly didn't have a top five. I just wanted to see her do it again. And do it again, she did, winning the listed Pakenham Cup in really strong style. And it was a really good win, irrespective of the price.
Yeah, no, it was a terrific victory. Do you think she can go on with it now? There's a nice race. I think it's the Bagot at Flemington over the 2,800 metres. Is she a mare that they've worked around? And as Fred Kersley Jr. pointed out, that when they went back in distance, and Matt Kamani on Michael Falgate's show as well this morning, they thought, well, the best way to beat her opposition was to break their hearts, make it a true staying trip.
Yeah, well, she's obviously a very good, you know, endurance sort of athlete and stayer. You cannot win your first six or ten, you know, if you're no good, especially if there's a stayer. Like, they don't tend to blossom until later. So, look, I'm well and truly trusting her now. Look, there are a lot of punters out there, and for good reason, that look at an SP profile winner like that and ignore it. But her last two now have been really good. Obviously, the Sandown Cup went back, ran on hard, beaten a length and a half by Azuro, and then chases a strong speed in a Pakenham Cup, wins it well, beating an informed horse, as mentioned. So, she's well and truly back on the radar. So, maybe we've missed the price, but, you know, we can only assess the races before, not after.
And for Yusofovic, I think that's how you pronounce it, EJ. I've been practising that name for a long, long time. But EJ's one a wonderful man. His story's inspiring. I remember listening to him on Michael Falgate's show on Racing Pulse and what he's been through in his life. And he's nearly the most informed trainer at the moment in Victoria. When you have a trainer like EJ just in red-hot form, do you put an extra length on his horses when you do the form? Neighbourhood was very good, and one of I think Neighbourhood, she was your best bet there on Saturday.
Yes, she was. And look, to answer your question, I think it's one of many factors. Look, it's probably at the lower end of the spectrum as far as factoring that in. But I guess what it does do, it's like sort of just the cherry on top. You know, if you really like a horse like Neighbourhood on Saturday, perfect example, you see a trainer in terrific striking form, strike rate in recent times, outstanding. It does give you a little boost of confidence, no doubt. So that probably answers your question to some extent. And look, her win on Saturday was exceptional. She got forced wide on the turn, and just as she was pushed wide, the leaders got away, so she had to make up an extra couple of lengths. You know, I thought it was an excellent win.
What about in that first race? That girl was the drifting favourite, but Star Surprise paid around $10. Did that surprise you? First of all, the price of the winner, and how did you rate the performance of the Philip Stokes filly in that girl?
I think they're both good, both very good. You know, it was a benchmark 73-year-old race, but I think we can guarantee that Cronulla are better than that rating fan. You know, that girl covered a fair bit of ground from a long way from home. However, as it turns out on the day, that was no disadvantage. Star Surprise, nice cold ride, weave through, was able to run her down. They beat the rest of them okay, and that third horse, Exquisite Beauty, had jumped out really well leading in as well. So I think it's a race you can trust. They broke 58 for the 1,000. So the winner had really good form around. Can't be done, those sort of horses. That girl had a terrific debut win around Ghana. So very easy to like. To answer the second part of your question, I think the price differential between them was significant and was probably wider than it should have been. However, I have to put my hand up and say I tipped that girl over Star Surprise in the race.
What about Yearlong January? Was it one of the wins of the day, doing what most horses couldn't and lead all of the way?
Yes, 100%. And it's a great, you know, I think not so much a lesson, but it's a great asset to have. Looking for future winners, those that defy the pattern of the day. So this horse was only third up, you know, still pretty early in the career. Good form around Rainier, Wild Planet, those sort of very, very handy bottom-end stakes-grade horses. And what I liked was the burst, sort of 400 to 200, I reckon, where the race was won and then held off those closes. So to defy the pattern of the day absolutely adds merit to the win, you know, in my humble.
I want to get your thoughts as well, and this is a question without notice. So I do apologise, and I'm kicking myself because I was meant to text you last night and ask you about to see if you can have a look at this race if you haven't already. But it was the second race at Ascot on Saturday. It was a one metro win race, and this little Testia was having her second start, a four-year-old mare by Testarossa. Now, the data tells you that she was clearly the run of the day. Her last 600 was in 33.6. Talking to some form and data students over in the West, she probably, that performance, she would have ran sixth, I think, in the winter bottom if she went like she did yesterday regarding her rating. When you have a look at a horse like that, can you tell how good she will be, or is it a wait and see until she meets the better horses?
No, she's very obviously very good. What happens in sport is when you go up in grade, you just get tested physically. Now, this happens in the NFL. You see, as you go from a pre-season game to a main game, they all run about 5 or 10% faster and they hit you a little bit harder. Same with rugby, same with AFL. What happens in cricket? They start bowling at your head and faster as you get up in grade. So you just tested physically. Now, that was a brilliant win. And you, again, you can't run time if you're not fast. So nothing short of outstanding. The test comes when there's pressure around you, and that's what separates, you know, the very, very good from the elite. You know, and there's a reason why elite are elite. There's not many of them. Yeah. So not many pass that test, do they?
And she passes your first test because she can run ridiculous time in the early part of her career. But I guess that... And we never really saw Black Caviar come off the bit, did we? But we haven't seen this will test you come off the bit. But it's interesting to see how much is actually under the bonnet when they do. Sometimes horses can find a couple of lengths. Some horses don't. So, Tom.
It's a great point you make. It's an outstanding point. I'm going to give you the Ribeiro.
Oh, thank you.
because you go back and look at Black Caviar. Go back and look at Maccabi Diva's tapes, if you like. What happened, certainly with Maccabi Diva, more specifically, because Black Caviar wasn't off the bit too often. Obviously, you know, in the UK, you know, they got busy on her and once or two other when she had to chase Haylis. But there wasn't much extra. Like in Maccabi Diva, she'd go from travelling, then Glenn Boss had pushed the button, and there wasn't a lot more. So I think those absolutely freakish elite they're giving their best anyway. Yeah. So they don't really need, you know, they don't really need and don't have a, perhaps a hell of a lot left. It's one of my many theories, mate, but I haven't got any real science to back it up. Or any data, which we love.
But you make a really good point, because how much quicker can they go? Like, she's gone 33.6 into a headwind, plus it's raining, probably the most difficult time to race on that day. But, like, it's sometimes you think, well, it's impossible to see a thoroughbred go that quick. When you have a look, if they go off the bit, if they find three or four lengths, they're like Superman.
Yeah. No, it's a great point. And I think there's a really good line to draw around recent champions of the turf there.
Question for Gator. Here we go. We've got a ton of questions coming your way, Gator. Geez, this segment's become nearly the most popular throughout the week, so it's a credit to yourself and your family. When you're framing your market, is there something you really, in capital letters, really, like from a form point of view, but there is no wedge at the price? What rules or exceptions do you apply to back it, and how does your staking change? That's from John. Great question, John.
No, it's a fabulous question, and we probably don't have sort of time to go into enough detail, but so it's a little bit different for me in that, so I do my form, say, for the Metropolitan Melbourne meeting on Wednesday. Unless it's a feature race, there's no markets out. So all I do and all I've got to go on is who I think will win. So, you know, it's not like I can tip something that's $12 and it starts at, you know, $4 or something. So I don't really have that luxury. So what I'm not really governed by price. So I can only rate them in the order that I think they'll finish, if you like. I give them a pecking order, but then can't change that. What you can do as a punter, though, is once a market comes up, so you tip. So there's a great example, race one on Saturday. You tip that girl, and even though she's pretty thin in the market, starts the prize who you thought was a clear second pick is 950. It is the perfect race to start playing your Cronellas, which we touched on last week, or your staking saver bet. You know, and if you're finding the winner quite often in your top two, you should be making money off that.
No, I totally agree there. And when you have a look at your rundown of your runners, then you nearly had to have something on the winner in that first race at Pakenham, because it was around $10. But I think you clearly had those two horses out in front with your ratings, reading
exactly
between
right.
the lines, yeah.
No, you're exactly right. And I think there was a margin to third on talent. It was in the race as well to some extent. I think what you're looking at there is from a betting perspective is how do I play it? Do I just take that horse into a win bet, the favourite, or do I then get into my Cronellas or saver bets and maybe have a little parlay with her to kick off your day? That's the way I played it on Saturday, and that's, you know, a perfect example of what John's asking about.
This is from Sam. Had my bucks at Pakenham on Saturday. Big group quaddy went wide to ensure a collect, then old Ida James, who I've had a lot of time for, returns to form and wins. Please explain how his form or her form can turn around like that in a solidly run race. Naturally, we had the other three legs.
Of course you did. Yeah, I know how it works. I know how Quaddy's work, believe me. We sort of touched on it a bit earlier. So she's won six of her first 10. So I don't think you can do that if you're no good. So the talent, we believe, was there. Lost her way, had some significant beat margins. So I had sort of thought maybe she just hasn't come back. She's lost her will for racing. Then she runs that race in the Sandown Cup, 3,200, a terrific run. All of a sudden, you know, she's back in the good books to some extent, but you just want to see one more run. And one more run we did. Unfortunately, she's tipped us out by winning at a huge price. So I guess the great art to what we do is finding those before everyone else does. Look, we sort of missed out there on Saturday. But it's a great lesson for punters, I think, that, you know, if the talent's there, it's there. You know, that's the main box you need to tick. You've got to be good enough to win. Everything else is secondary.
I had one of those days, and I don't really like talking about my punting stories, but I had two in the first leg at Pakenham, and then I decided to go to the field because I thought, it's wide open, and I'll take on the favourite. Hopefully he gets beat. And then I had two horses in the third leg, and then I had Propel in the final leg.
One out.
Yeah. So I spent $75 for a big collect, and never saw daylight, Damien Thornton. But the question I ask you is, I thought, I've never been in this situation, so I thought I might lay off here to make a profit. But when you went through the this is how lucky I am, every bloody horse had a chance.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
So you're going to lose. I thought, if I lay off and miss one, something's going to knock me out. I'm going to do all my money anyway.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And look, I was told when I was much younger, by, you know, some exceptional judges, you know, always lay off and make sure you're making a profit. But it just comes down to, you know, are you in it for the dollars and cents? Are you in it for a hobby or an interest? And in a race like that, where you can make a case for probably 10 of the 12, it makes it really hard to lay off with success.
Yeah, I had to
What I could add, though, Vainstream was well back, so maybe that's one you could have, you know, tacked onto the punters, I don't know.
And I had to go to Ziggy Albert's, one of the great performers. If you ever heard of Ziggy Albert's, I highly recommend you go to him to just calm myself down after that. Anyway,
this is
from Paddy. Would you rather have a $10 bet at 100-1 fixed odds that jumps at $1.50 and loses in a photo, or a $10 bet at $1.50 fixed odds that blows out to 100-1 and bolts in?
Well, there's a much greater... Oh, I see. Hang on. No, you've lost me.
So would you rather back a drifter and win than a horse that firms and loses?
Look, I'd always rather back a winner. I think that's the thing. But I think the thing with betting fluctuations, the reality is they don't tell the whole story. You know, there are a couple of their well-backed on Saturday that won, like Bainstream. But, you know, there were plenty. You know, I was doing the full Wednesday at Sky, and there had to be five or six of them that drifted alarmingly and won, some of them quite well. So you have to remember that these betting fluctuations are only other people's opinion.
Correct. This is from Matt. Can Lise Grasseur, the Cox Plate champ, beat many say the greatest horse at the moment in the world, Arm and Eye, in the Arima Kinnan there in Japan towards, I think it's Boxing Day or around that time anyway?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll be tuning in. I know that. But,
what a contest it will be.
Yeah. But I think when I was... I don't have the form in front of me on the Japanese. However, I do remember... when lining Lish Bashir up into the Cox Plate, that she had that Arm and Eye form line, didn't she? So I think if I'm right in saying Arm and Eye's had a measure in the past, so probably a better horse, but look, I'm not a Japanese racing expert, I have to concede that.
This is from Simone. How good is racing in December? Would you like to see more group racing later in the year to capitalise on the beautiful weather?
Yeah, look, I don't know. There's been plenty of debate of late, hasn't there? And in most years, it seems to be gathering momentum sort of for later start carnivals. It's easy to vote yes when you have minus 50 through cup week. It's limited.
Yeah.
Look, the problem you've got is that as you're getting into sort of, you know, the Villiers, around the Villiers meeting and a few in December, there's just no turnaround. You know, by late January, early February, we're back up and running again. Yeah. So horses just can't stay up forever. If they're motorbikes, I reckon that'd be the ideal scenario.
You'd have to change the calendar all around, wouldn't you?
That's
because
right.
The autumn would have to push back, then the winter carnival have to be pushed back, and then our carnival would have to be pushed back. Gator, as a times man, when it comes to handicapping, but does he place less emphasis on times over staying distances?
Less emphasis? No, it's all relative. So you've got to, but it's slightly different in that. For an endurance runner, whether you're an equine athlete or a human, you've got to be able to sustain speed, for a long period of time, if you want to be absolutely elite. And you don't, I don't think anyone needs me to tell them that.
No.
You know, you look at the Olympics or 10,000 metre runners or marathon runners, they run quick for a long time, funnily enough. For sprinters, there's just less margin for error. You've got to be more explosive, and you don't need to be as fast for as long. Like a horse like Nature's Grip is brilliant early, brilliant mid-race. He's not dynamite late, but the damage is done by then. He's run quick overall time, hasn't he? So they're different, but the same, if you know what I mean. You still need to be fast at some point.
Morning. Just wondering who's the best two-year-old, either raced or trialled, that David's seen this year. That's from Tony.
I thought Dame Giselle's win in Sydney off that fierce speed was probably the best win I've seen in this early doors, isn't it? But I thought that win was exceptional, to be honest, to the eye and on the clock.
And one more, Gator, before we let you go and recover and have that ice bath. Gator, is there any evidence to suggest that favourite runners perform better winning the first two races as opposed to the overall program? That's from Peter.
Look, I don't have any evidence to back that up. I think there's probably a school of thought that some of the early races, they tend to be programmed as smallish fields. They tend to be programmed as two-year-old races. So there are probably many underlying factors which I wouldn't be right on top of, but it's worth investigating.
Gator, it's been a lot of fun. Now, there's one more question I save for last. I think the winner of the competition to Rabura's today to win a $75 voucher at Rabura's at Swallows 192 Station Street, Port Melbourne. Rabura's offers only the freshest seafood available, purchased at the fish markets every day, prepared on the premises, goes to John, who asked the question, when framing your market, is there something you really like from a form point of view, but there is no edge at the price? What rules or expectations do you apply to back it, and how does your stake change? So well done to John there. This question from Ben before we let you leave. This question seems to come up all of the time. Question for Gator. When did you realise that you thought you were better than the rest of the boys on Get On? I think Ben puts his name to this question for the first time.
Right, yes. No, we answered this last week. The answer was almost immediate.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just only because of, you know, who I was working with. I mean, on my left, I've got Jason Richardson. On my right, I've got Mick Sharkey. So it's all relative. You know, you can win a benchmark 58 at Mornington. It doesn't mean you're a very good horse.
No, that's a very good point. Thank you, Gator. You are the Japanese of triathlons these days with your staying prowess, your turn of foot. You've been presenting beautifully in the yard. And job well done. Congratulations. You're a leading football coach, a Red in the Herald Sun. You win triathlons and you're the best tipster in the game. There's nothing that you can't do. And your wife's a very lucky lady.
Tell her that.
Yeah. Thank you, Gator.
Ciao.
There's David Gately.